Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly. What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to Toking and Talking with your host, Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, everybody. So the big news this week has been the testimony of Attorney General Jeff Sessions, the Keebler Gump, Bilbo Bigot. Yeah, that guy. Anyway, Jeff Sessions was on testimony on Capitol Hill, and many people noted on Twitter that Jeff Sessions seems to have a worse memory than the potheads he wants to lock up. That was a nice meme and a joke that went around the other day. But now that joke has reached all the way to the top of the Washington Beltway punditocracy. And this comes from a Washington Post piece by Dana Milbank. And you've seen Dana Milbank on the Sunday shows, on the cable news shows. He's, you know, well-known political pundit. He wrote a piece called Jeff Sessions in His Own Words. I just want to read it to you because it shows you how far we've come. Here we go. Attorney General Jeff Sessions adamantly opposes legalizing marijuana, but this position may not be in his own self-interest. A study published last month by the medical journal Nature Medicine found that when older mice were given low doses of THC, chemical in cannabis that makes people high, the rodents' learning and memory improved to the level of younger mice. Researchers are planning to repeat the study on 60 to 70-year-old humans to see whether they, too, have improved memory after consuming pot. After the Attorney General's testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee on Tuesday afternoon, he might be a prime candidate for the study. Here, pulled from the hearing transcript, is Jeff Sessions in his own words.
I do not have any recollection of meeting or talking to the Russian ambassador or any other Russian officials. I would have gladly have reported the meeting, the encounter that may have occurred, that some say occurred in the Mayflower, if I had remembered it, or if it actually occurred, which I don't remember that it did. I guess I could say that I possibly had a meeting, but I still did not recall it. I have to rack my brain, but I don't recall it now. I don't recall it, Senator Warner. I don't recall that, Senator Rubio. I'd have to think about that. I don't recall it, Senator Manchin. We may have discussed that. I don't have a real recall of the meeting. I don't have any recollection of even knowing that he would be there. I did not remember that. I did not remember that, but I understand he was there, and so I don't doubt that he was. I believe that representations are correct. In fact, I recently saw a video of him coming into the room. I don't recall any such conversation. I don't recall him ever having such a conversation, nor do I recall any conversations with any Russian officials at the Mayflower Hotel. I don't recall any of those individuals having any meeting with Russian officials. I don't recall it. I don't recall.
Do you recall that article when it came out?
Not exactly.
And you don't recollect whether Mr. Kushner had any conversations with Ambassador Kislyak at that session?
I do not. You never remember having a conversation or meeting with Ambassador Kislyak. I do not.
Just on your first page of your 3 pages of written testimony, you wrote, "Nor do I recall, do not have recollection, do not remember it." So my question is, for any of your testimony today, did you refresh your memory with any written documents?
I attempted to refresh my recollection, but so much of this is in a wholesale campaign of an extraordinary nature that you're moving so fast, you don't keep notes.
I don't have a detailed memory of that. I don't recall whether that was discussed or not. I don't recall that being discussed, not to my recollection. I have no recollection of a discussion with the Russian ambassador. If any brief interaction occurred in passing with the Russian ambassador during that reception, I do not remember it. It's conceivable that that occurred. I just don't remember it. I don't have a detailed memory of that. I don't recall. I don't recall that. I don't recall it. I don't recall any. I don't recall. Really, folks? Really? That's the top law enforcement official in the United States of America who's got a worse memory than Drew Barrymore in 51st Dates. Jeez, man. I know a lot of stoners. I know a lot of tokers, and they all have a far better memory than that. It seems awfully convenient to me, actually, that Jeff Sessions seems to be having this amnesia. It seems almost as if that Russian ambassador Kislyak, I think he's like King Midas. Anyone he touches or comes into contact with loses their memory. He's got a special memory wiping power. He's got that little flashlight from Men in Black, right? Blink! I do not recall if I'm supposed to take a break right now or not. I just do not recall.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
This is Cannabis Facts from Robert Platshorn's thesilvertour.org. Supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. In 1937, the second most prescribed medicine, marijuana, was banned. It wasn't about marijuana. The paper, oil, and chemical industries lobbied to end hemp farming. No longer labor-intensive, an acre of hemp produced more quality paper than 4 acres of trees. Plastics and fibers could be produced from a plant. Hemp can even produce 10 times the energy of today's ethanol. As marijuana prohibition ends, many states now allow farmers to again grow hemp. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to process America's hemp crop at hempinc.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Freedom Leaf Preview with Steve Bloom from Freedom Leaf Magazine. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. Quick reminder, you can subscribe to my feed on Twitter. I'm at Radical Russ, if you'd like to follow. And I talk about everything on my Radical Russ feed. So if you just want the marijuana news, the marijuana tweets, subscribe to the show feed at MJ Agenda Show on Twitter, and you'll get just the marijuana stuff. Now, I wanted to talk about a couple things. One thing really quick. I surf a lot of websites doing this job. I do a lot of research. I'm reading the news all across the country. And I'd like to...
I'd like to say something to the web designers of local news websites, whether it be the local newspaper or the local TV news channel, whatever it might be. I have three requests, please. Three. Just three things that make my life a lot easier. Number one, no more autoplay video. Turn that shit off. Nobody wants your autoplayed video when they're going to a newspaper's website. I understand what the TV websites are doing it. They shouldn't do it either. But a newspaper website, I don't need your autoplayed video. You're a newspaper. I'm getting print, okay? Number two, what is with this template they use that has the auto refresh on it? Maybe it's for their comments or their ads or something, but you load the page and it just has a circle on it forever. Like, it just, it's constantly refreshing. Turn that shit off. That hogs up memory in the browser and ends up crashing my show. So turn that shit off. And number three, would it be so difficult to put the name of your hometown somewhere on the website? I can't tell you how many times I read some story and I click the link and it's the Springfield News Leader. Okay. Springfield, Missouri, Springfield, Illinois, Springfield, Oregon. No, just Springfield. And then you got to go find the weather page or the sports page, figure out which state. That's good. That's good compared to some of these places where you just go to the website for the Times News. The Times News of what? You know, and it's some small town in like Arkansas, right? And you don't know, right? Please. Local news websites, could you just do that? Put the name of your town on the website header. Thank you. All right. Enough of my complaints. let me get to this story that Tom Angel has up on MassRoots. Oh, my goodness. So there's a committee. There's a group that is criticizing the Schedule I designation of marijuana. And that's not surprising, right? Because marijuana shouldn't be in Schedule One. Schedule One, just as a reminder, are drugs that are classified by the federal government as having a great potential for abuse, no safe use under doctor supervision, and no medical purpose, right? So cannabis fails on all three of the tests for Schedule One, but it's in Schedule One. So there's this coalition that is protesting, criticizing marijuana's Schedule One designation. This was posted on the U.S. government's publishing office on Wednesday. They're called Friends of the National Institute on Drug Abuse. Friends of NIDA. They call themselves a coalition of over 150 scientific and professional societies, patient groups, and other organizations committed to preventing and treating substance abuse disorders. Or substance use disorders, they say. So these aren't like pro-marijuana people that are complaining about Schedule One. These are the antis. These are the drug rehab people. These are the doctors and such that generally don't like marijuana, who are now joining us in complaining about its Schedule One designation. And here's what they wrote. Quote, "The committee is also concerned that restrictions associated with Schedule One of the Controlled Substance Act effectively limit the amount or type of research that can be conducted on marijuana or its component chemicals. NIDA is encouraged to continue supporting a full range of research on the effects of marijuana and its components, including policy research focused on policy change and implementation across the country. The committee also directs NIDA to provide a short report on the barriers to research that result from the classification of marijuana as a Schedule I substance." End quote. Okay, so great stuff there, right? Let's have NIDA figure out and tell us why Schedule One is putting barriers to research on cannabis. That's something I think we could all want, right? Well, here's where it gets weird. This board of scientific advisors includes Kevin Sabet from Project Sam. Yes, Kevin Sabet from Project Sam, as well as former drug czar Barry McCaffrey, Patrick Kennedy, the co-founder of Project Sam, former NIDA director Robert DuPont, and former ONDCP staffer Bertha Madras. By the way, Kennedy and Madras are on that Trump Opioids Commission, too. So five heavy hitter anti-marijuana people on this committee. And why this is so maddening is because of the numerous times these people have told us when we go forth and say, hey, you know, marijuana doesn't belong in Schedule 1. It ought to be rescheduled to Schedule 2 or maybe 3 or even just taken off the schedule. These people, specifically Kevin Sabet, have told us, oh, Schedule 1, it's just symbolic. Seriously. Kevin Sabet's group, Project Sam, called rescheduling a red herring. In a 2015 report, they said it, quote, would not solve the problem of the need for more research and instead would likely encourage illegal operators to continue to manufacture inferior products. That's Project Sam saying rescheduling is a red herring. It wouldn't really help research any. But now the head of Project Sam is saying they're concerned that Schedule 1 effectively limits the amount and type of research that can be conducted. Which is it, Kevin? Schedule 1's a red herring that won't fix research any, or you're concerned that Schedule 1 affects research? God, you belong in the same room with Sessions here as far as being able to stick to your story. And it's not just Kevin Sabet's group. Kevin Sabet himself, in a Huffington Post piece, wrote about reclassifying marijuana and said it, quote, is distracting and essentially meaningless, and quote, it would mainly serve as a symbolic victory for marijuana advocates, end quote. It's meaningless and symbolic, but now he's saying he's concerned about the restrictions associated with Schedule 1. Let's go back to 2013. In a law review article in 2013, Sabet argued, quote, it is not necessary for marijuana to be rescheduled in order for legitimate research to proceed. Schedule 1 status does not prevent a product from being tested and researched for potential medical use, end quote. So he says it's not necessary to reschedule, but now is saying, let's have NIDA produce a report on how Schedule 1 creates barriers to research. Now, in 2015, when Sabet was being questioned by Cory Booker, Senator of New Jersey, he was forced to admit that moving marijuana to Schedule 2 would, quote, make it absolutely easier to research, end quote. So this isn't the first time Kevin Sabet's been waffling a bit on Schedule 1. How about Bertha Madras? Bertha Madras, who's also on this Friends of NIDA, she called for the Drug Enforcement Administration. She called the DEA's denial of marijuana rescheduling, quote, a victory for science that to me is very comforting, end quote. So not rescheduling out of Schedule 1 is a victory for science, but now she thinks that we should encourage a full range of research on marijuana. Last year, Bertha Madras wrote, quote, is Schedule 1 drug a roadblock to marijuana research? Not really. And moving to Schedule 2 would be, quote, conceivably unethical, end quote. How about we check out Kennedy? Kennedy and DuPont, two of these other guys, joined with Kevin Sabet in a letter from Project Sam in 2014 asking the Obama administration not to reschedule marijuana, saying it would be, quote, scientifically dubious and, quote, is not necessary to facilitate research, end quote. And of course, as drugs are, Barry McCaffrey argued that marijuana, quote, can't be moved to Schedule 2, end quote. So now, for some reason, we've got all these ardent drug warriors fighting for a rescheduling of cannabis. Funny how that seems to, the timing of it just seems to fit with GW Pharmaceuticals getting its go-ahead for phase 3 trials on its Epidiolex, and Insys Therapeutics getting a Schedule 2 designation for its oral cannabis spray. Seems to me like these people are turning around on Schedule 1 only because now they know the pharmaceutical companies are ready to jump in and monopolize cannabis as a Schedule 2 or a Schedule 3 drug. This goes back to what I was saying about yesterday about worrying about the move to Schedule 2 or Schedule 3 and how we need to just deschedule
so that these big pharmaceutical companies don't take over.
The Nile ain't just the river in Egypt.
All right, that sound means that it's 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing. We got another one of those Portland bombers rolled up. Let's get to the briefing. We'll be right back with more cruelty from New Mexico and kindness in British Columbia when we return.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about teen drug use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose deaths, you know, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for our Government at Work, the latest in cannabis reform at the local, state, federal, and international level. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Pod 2.0. It's not your father's Woodstock weed. It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back. Just checking out folks in the chat room. And if you're not there in the chat room, get yourself a YouTube account. Join us at live.mjagenda.com. You can chat with us during the live show. And don't forget that we have a community link now at mjagenda.com. It's our blog page, and you can add posts to the community page. John Thomas in the chat room has already been doing it. He can tell you how it works. But yeah, that's been the goal of this show since the beginning, is to get as much community interaction in the show as we possibly can. I can read the internet, I can travel across this country as much as possible, but I can't do a better job than you can at your own local level, because you know the local players, you know the local politics, you've got the local news bookmarked. If you've got news stories at your local level, please post them up there at mjagenda.com, and I might use them on the show, and this will be a great way for us to do community cannabis journalism. It's always been my goal. All right, so questions in the chat room. Any new travel out of Portland Airport news? Let's see. Not leaving Portland probably until perhaps August. At least the Seattle Hemp Fest, third weekend of August, I'll be up there. But it looks like I'll be home most this summer, which is fine by me. I need to build this show platform and pay some bills. So thanks for the question. And we probably won't be out of town until August. September is the normal conference in D.C. I'll be out there. Boston Freedom Rally in Boston comes the weekend after. So I'll likely be on the East Coast between September 9th and 18th. So it looks like 9 days in D.C. and Boston. Then the Reform Conference, the Drug Policy Alliance Reform Conference, happens October 10th through 13th. I'll definitely be there in Atlanta. And then end of the year in December, I'm going back to Jamaica for a week because I love it. So that's my travel schedule for the rest of the year. Also, wanted to make a personal note that I got a car yesterday, or 2 days ago. I guess it's 2 days now. But I've talked about that on the show many times, how it's been 5 years since I've had a car. Now I have a car. I went out and got a car because, I need to make more money. So I wanted to be a Lyft driver, and you can't be a Lyft driver without a car. I understand that's one of their requirements. You can't give piggyback rides. So I went out and got a car, 2012 Honda Civic Si, just trick little car, 6-speed manual transmission. And, it's got some pickup, this car. So if you make your way to Portland and you need a ride, I'm your Lyft guy, man. I'll be the coolest, jamminest Lyft driver you'll ever meet. So that's a little update. And just to let you know that, you know, I'm doing that because, frankly, I have to. If I want to keep this show going, I still have to pay bills. And I have to find work that I can do in between traveling places and show schedule. And so Lyft sounds like what it's going to be for me. So anyway, got the new car. I'm still trying to come up with a name for the car. I always like to name my cars. I haven't come up with a name yet. So got any suggestions, let me know in the chat room. All right, let me get to some other stories in the marijuana world. Let's start with the cruel story first, and then we'll go to the nice story. The cruel story comes out of New Mexico. We mentioned this in the Cannabis Headline News, where the Secretary of Health, Lynn Gallagher, rejected the recommendations to add opiate dependence and Alzheimer's disease as conditions to qualify for medical marijuana in New Mexico. Rejected opiate dependence and Alzheimer's. Now, the board, they've got a cannabis advisory board. They voted 5-1 to pass this. 5-1, let's add opiate use disorder. And she rejected it. Lynn Gallagher rejected this, saying there was a lack of scientific research. She said, quote, "While I share the advisory board's concern about opioid use and its costs, I cannot say with confidence that the use of cannabis for treatment of opioid dependence and its symptoms would be either safe or effective." She continues by saying, "Also, I am concerned that utilizing one addictive substance to treat dependence on another without reliable medical evidence and human research studies is problematic at best, considering our current opioid epidemic." I have to imagine that in order to become the health secretary of one of the United States, that you have to have a college degree of some sort. I don't know for sure. I'm going to say sure. I'm going to take a bet on that you probably have to have a college degree to become the health secretary. So when you get your undergraduate college degree, usually, as far as a lot of colleges I know, there's a logic course involved. Logic 101, right? And so I'm trying to understand how this woman managed to get a college degree when she is issuing as her prime concern that we're using one addictive substance to treat dependence on another, and it would be neither safe nor effective. Now, let's take a look. Let's just unpack that for a second. You got people who are addicted to an opiate substance, heroin, OxyContin, fentanyl, whatever it might be. A substance that can kill them, a substance for which 23% of the people who try it, lifetime dependency risk is 23%, and there's been more people dying of these drug overdoses in 2016 than died in the entire Vietnam War. But oh God, we can't give them pot. They might become potheads. How does this woman function? How does she dress herself with a brain that can accept that kind of thinking? I We're substituting one addictive substance for another. Yeah! Ding, ding, yes, we are. We are substituting the one that can't kill you for the one that can kill you. That seems pretty reasonable to me. Would be neither safe nor effective. Look, you can doubt whether it's effective. We can say the jury's out on this one, even though, I mean, we got the preliminary studies here that are showing, now these are correlational, but they show that, you know, the states that have medical marijuana laws have 25% fewer opioid deaths. They have 1,836 fewer pills prescribed. They have fewer people showing up dead in car crashes. They have fewer people checking in to rehabs for opiate use disorders. But again, it's correlational. It might not be a causational effect. So we can debate whether it's effective to give people cannabis to get off opioids. But safe? How can that even be a debate? You got people that are addicted to a harmful substance that can kill them. You can't worry about the safety hazard of smoking pot that might make them get the munchies and giggle at stupid jokes and enjoy noodly guitar solos and have an affinity for patchouli. I mean, what is it you're worried about? My God, this is insane. She says, she wrote in her statement, this is, again, Health Secretary Gallagher in New Mexico wrote, quote, most of the articles cited in the petition concern the effect of cannabinoids on chronic pain and do not specifically address opioid use or opioid addiction. Okay. And also, the other condition that she rejected, Alzheimer's disease, they voted unanimously on that. That was a 5-0 decision to add Alzheimer's. 4-1 on the heroin opiate thing, but 5-0 on Alzheimer's. And she says that the last health secretary, Retta Ward, rejected dementia as a condition. So she says, Gallagher now says, quote, I share the concerns raised by Secretary Ward and add that the advisory board has not provided any subsequent evidence to change that determination, end quote. She also cited her concern about possible drug interactions between cannabis and medications prescribed to treat dementia. Oh, man. Okay. No, first of all, it's frustrating as hell to hear this from her because we have states. I don't have my spreadsheet open right now, but a lot of the medical cannabis states already have Alzheimer's on their list. So it's already being used for the treatment of Alzheimer's. Some states even have dementia on that list. It's already being used. So this worry that there's no evidence of dementia or Alzheimer's being treated, that's false. That's just flat out false. That we have it. We got people on it right now. And again, you got to wonder, what is it they think marijuana does? You got to wonder, has a person like this ever smoked pot? Like, what do you think is happening when we smoke pot? It's a testimony to how strong the reefer madness propaganda for the past 80 years has inculcated people who should know better. A health freaking secretary, for hell's sake, ought to know better. That this is reefer madness. This is insane. Worried about drug interactions between cannabis and dementia medications. Hell, you should be worried just about the dementia medications by themselves. The pharmaceuticals by themselves don't need interactions to be shitty for you. They got a list of side effects that take half the commercial to read. And you're worried about the interaction when we have nothing in scientific literature that indicates any sort of adverse drug reactions between cannabis and commonly prescribed drugs. The only one that Dr. Mitch Earlywine tells me about on the show is Viagra. Viagra actually works better on marijuana. It has a stronger effect. Not a bad drug interaction. But we don't have any. So this is what really bothers me. It's like we have, she'll base her position
on having no side. Well, we don't have the scientific evidence that cannabis will help people with opiates. But when we turn and say, well, we don't have any scientific evidence that there's any problem from cannabis drug interactions. Oh, no, better to be safe than sorry. And then there was one other thing she rejected. An advisory board recommendation to use telemedicine to evaluate patients for certification. So, you know, this is, you know, Skype. Use a Skype video call to evaluate whether or not someone needs medical cannabis. She said that telemedicine evaluations, quote, could erode the already limited contact that patients have with certifying practitioners. Oh, God forbid we make it easier for patients to talk to their doctors. God forbid we save them the expense of driving across the great expanses of New Mexico to make it to the city to see their doctor and pay that special fee, you know, the appointment fee, and wait in a room and read the out-of-date magazines. We wouldn't want to take that away from them.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today, or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
I'm Russ Belville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Marijuana Policy Insider with Marijuana Policy Project. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Hello, Mr. Man.
Hi.
I'm working. I'm sorry, no food till this is done.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back, everybody. So we covered the bad news story out of New Mexico. Now I got to get you the good news story. Get that taste out of our mouth. A good news story out of British Columbia. Leafly is reporting that in a triumph for sanity and compassion, British Columbia has declared mandatory minimum prison sentences for cannabis producers to be unconstitutional. It has to do with the case of a guy named Keith Stephen Elliott. He was in the BC town of Kelowna. He did 2 years working as a $20 an hour trimmer. And when the grow up was busted, he was charged under Canada's Controlled Drugs and Substances Act, which mandates a 6-month minimum prison sentence for anyone caught producing between 6 and 200 plants for the purpose of trafficking. Now, the grow up had 195 plants. Now, remember, the guy's a trimmer, right? It's something you got to pay attention to. This isn't the grower who's getting this mandatory minimum prison sentence for producing marijuana plants. It's a trimmer. So I guess the act of trimming counts as part of the production process, and then, boom, he's busted, 6 months. So his sentencing judge took note of the propriety of this sentencing act and said, quote, the sentencing judge found the mandatory minimum provision unconstitutional based on a complex legal test
that examines whether or not the mandatory minimum would be grossly disproportionate for hypothetical offenders. As the judge declared in court, quote, I note that a six-month sentence is typical for a first-time trafficker involved in a relatively sophisticated commercial dial-a-dope operation. Imposing that sentence on a 19-year-old student or a migraine sufferer who is growing six plants intending to share them with friends would, in my view, be abhorrent to most Canadians. So he declined to send this guy to jail, let him go with a suspended sentence, 2 years probation. Now the Crown appealed the ruling, Canadian government appealed the ruling, went to the BC Court of Appeals, and on June 9th, they upheld the original decision, saying, quote, the lawyer, John Conroy, said, quote, the mandatory minimum has been struck down as unconstitutional, and the decision is binding on all BC courts and could be used as precedent to fight mandatory minimums in other provinces. Now, there's one avenue left for the government of Canada. They could take this all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada, but for now, good news on the west coast of Canada, Vancouver, BC, all these people involved that mandatory minimums are unconstitutional. Great news coming out of BC. Now, more good news. This will be our good news segment. There's a story out of Fox 31 in Denver about a study being promoted by BDS Analytics that claims that cannabis consumers are, quote, among the most well-adjusted and successful of American adults. Most well-adjusted and successful. Yes, thank you. I might need some qualifiers on how well-adjusted and how successful in my case, but anyway, we'll take it. So there's three categories of people that they took a look at. Cannabis consumers, people who are or have been consuming cannabis. Acceptors, these are people who don't consume cannabis but might consider consuming cannabis. And rejectors, people who hate cannabis, never going to use it. And so what they found was of those three groups of people, consumers, and keep in mind, we're talking about Colorado, okay? But they found consumers in Colorado were more likely to have full-time jobs, more likely to say that they are more satisfied with their lives now than they were a year ago, more likely to say they are very social, and more likely to say they enjoy outdoor recreation than the acceptors or the rejectors. Here's the actual numbers. Get behind this. Full-time employment is enjoyed by 64% of consumers compared to 51% of acceptors and 54% of rejectors. So a little over half the people not smoking pot have full-time jobs in Colorado. Almost two-thirds of the pot smokers have full-time jobs. Nearly 5 in 10 Colorado consumers agree they are more satisfied with life today than they were a year ago, compared to about 4 in 10 among the acceptors and rejectors. Well, I think there's probably a good reason for that. I think we feel better than we did a year ago because our businesses are booming and we're not being arrested anymore and weed's legal. Yeah, I'd feel a whole lot better about life. Among the consumers, 36% agree they are very social, compared to 21% for acceptors and 28% for rejectors. Again, a third of our people say they're social, very social. And, you know, we have to be. Sharing in joint circles right there is the most social thing you can do. Consumers in Colorado say they enjoy outdoor recreation. 58% of the consumers compared to 36% for rejectors. So the pot smokers, half the pot smokers like outdoor rec. Only a third of the rejectors like outdoor rec. Positive lifestyle indicators, they call them. And it's funny how this gets framed to the mainstream as, wow, this amazing study is blowing everybody's mind. It's blowing away the stereotypes about cannabis consumers. And, you know, it's not. What it's doing is revealing what's always been there. The stereotype, to me, has always been a focus on the top of the iceberg. See, under prohibition, cannabis consumers are like an iceberg, and the waterline is your visibility, right? And the tip of the iceberg, you got your artists and your musicians and your celebrities and the self-employed and the unemployed and people in various areas where they either have nothing to lose or are their own boss, where they can be out and proud about their cannabis consumption. But below that waterline, the other 90% of that iceberg are the teachers and doctors and plumbers and cops and lawyers and supermarket clerks and the people who can't be out and proud without losing their job or their kids or something. And so as legalization happens, that waterline starts to recede. And the mainstream goes, oh my God, look at this mother is a successful mom and a business person, and yet she smokes pot. Oh my goodness, this guy over here started his own tech job firm and he smokes pot too. Oh my, these athletes, they use pot. It's shocking to the mainstream, but it's not shocking to us. We've known this for a long time now. And finally, one other good news story to end this good news segment. We've got the CARES Act has been reintroduced. This is Senators Rand Paul, the Republican of Kentucky, Cory Booker, the Democrat from New Jersey, and Kirsten Gillibrand, the Democrat from New York, reintroduced the Compassionate Access Research Expansion and Respect States Act, which would change the Controlled Substances Act to allow the possession, production, and distribution of medical marijuana in the states with established medical marijuana programs. Those 29 states and D.C., the CARES Act would prevent the federal government from prosecuting these businesses and individuals in the states where medical marijuana is legal. And the people are behind this. When you take polls, you find that 3/4 of the people out there think the federal government should leave this alone to the states. Let the states handle this situation. And that it's not a priority for the federal government to be interfering. And that's not just, you know, interviewing the Western people, the Eastern people, or the pro-marijuana people. This is across the board. You ask Republicans, and they will say, no, let the states deal with the marijuana. Hell, if Colorado wants to be hippy-dippy Rocky Mountain High, let them. But by God, here in Kansas, we won't. That's the way they look at this. And we've seen this in action. In the most Republican conservative place you can imagine, a place surrounded by marijuana reforms, and that is my home state of Idaho. In 2013, the Idaho Senate voted on 2 resolutions. One resolution was that the federal government, the state of Idaho shall never, ever, ever, never, ever, for any reason whatsoever, for any people at any time, ever legalize marijuana. Now, marijuana is already quite illegal in Idaho, and there's not much hope that it's going to be legal anytime soon in Idaho. But the Idaho Senate wanted to make absolutely double dog dare sure that there was never going to be legalization in Idaho, and they passed this thing, like 29-5 vote, that there'll never be legal marijuana. Now, the next year, they went and passed a CBD oil law, but so never was only like, you know, 14 months or something, but still, they voted it'll never be legal. But that same Senate, chock full of Republicans who hate weed, had another resolution to vote on. And this was a resolution that said the federal government should enforce the Controlled Substances Act more stringently in the states of Washington and Colorado that have legalized marijuana as of that time, is 2013. And the Idaho Senate voted that down. The Republicans said no, even though Northern Idaho borders Washington State, even though kids at the University of Idaho can drive 9 miles across the border and get legal weed in Spokane, Washington. Despite all that, the Idaho Senate said, nope, states' rights, baby. If Washington wants to do that, that's up to Washington. Now, it's a kind of a self-serving vote because, you know, these right-wingers that are into states' rights, their whole thing is, yeah, let Colorado
pass the legal weed and let us pass the abortion restrictions, right? Every state's rights for everybody, right? Let Washington legalize weed and let us have as many guns for anybody that wants them, right? So the state's rights thing serves them. They want to have it for their own immigration laws and their own abortion laws and their own gay laws and whatever else they want to discriminate against. So they don't want to be seen as being anti-state in a rare show of political consistency. They didn't want to be seen as hypocrites. And God knows how rare that is. They voted against federal interference in the legal marijuana states. So this CARES Act being introduced at the federal level, not much chance of it getting through this Republican-controlled Congress or even getting a hearing in this Congress, but it's good that it's reintroduced. It's good that we continue to press that in the Congress. And every time they introduce this thing, they'll add co-sponsors. They'll get more information about it to their colleagues. And I have a feeling in 2018, there's a strong chance that the House and Senate go Democratic. Who knows? Maybe by 2019, we've got the feds off our backs in the medical and legal states. Got to play the long game.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association and the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Northwest Cannabis Chronicle from the Marijuana Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Shanna, your Hector David, PKA Dirtball.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everybody. We got just 7 minutes to the top of the hour. And as we close up shop here today at the Marijuana Agenda, my thanks go out to you in the chat room. You've actually, we haven't come up with a nickname for the new Honda Civic SI. Well, it's a 2012. But we do now have the license plates. Thanks to the chat room, the license plate, the vanity license plate that I'm going to get for the Honda Civic is going to be Do T. D-O space T-E-A. Get it? Civic duty? But it's a double entendre, right? Because T is what they used to call weed back in the jazz era. So do tea. Ha ha ha, do tea. Yeah, civic do tea. That's going to be the license plate. Thank you so much, chat room, for your creativity. As we wind things up here, a couple of quick marijuana stories. One out of the state of New Jersey, where Governor Chris Christie. Yes, I know, Chris Christie. Yes, hold on now, people. Where Governor Chris Christie presides over a state that has now arresting more people for marijuana than ever before. Now, marijuana arrests have generally been going down across this country, but not New Jersey. According to this new report from the American Civil Liberties Union of New Jersey, if you lined up every person who's been arrested on marijuana charges since 2000, they would stretch the entire length of the New Jersey Turnpike and into Maryland. The arrests have climbed steadily and, of course, have disproportionately targeted blacks in New Jersey, more than three times likely than white counterparts to be arrested, despite the fact they use weed at the same rates. They also say that the racial disparity is likely far higher because state and federal reporting on crime statistics lump Hispanic suspects in with white ones. So you, pardon the pun, weed out the Hispanics out of that white number, and it's a bigger disparity between black and white. So this is an analysis of the FBI Uniform Crime Report and census data from 2000 to 2013 as they're looking at legalizing marijuana in the state of New Jersey. And what it found was since 2000, okay, so your first governor in the 2000s in New Jersey was DeFrancesco, or DeFrancesco, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, but average per year for this guy was 17,861 arrests. That went down upon the election of McGreevy, Governor McGreevy, 2002 to 2004, 17,113. Governor Cody, 18,522. Governor Corzine, 2006 through 2009, 20,137. Now, Governor Corzine was the one who, on like the last few days in he was in office, I think it was his last day in office, signed New Jersey's medical marijuana law, pretty much just to spite incoming Governor Chris Christie. So you had 20,000 marijuana arrests per month, or per year, I should say, under Corzine. You'd think you legalize medical marijuana, well, you're taking those people out, right? You're taking some of these people that could be arrested out of the figures. No. Chris Christie, 2010 to 2013, 23,026 arrests average per year. The average from McGreevy to Cody jumped by 1,400. The average from Cody to Corzine jumped, about 1,500. The average from Corzine to Christie jumps 3,000. Twice as much of a jump between his administration and the one previous as compared to the three previous administrations. So the ACLU estimates that these agencies spend about $143 million a year to enforce New Jersey marijuana laws, and 9 in 10 arrests targeted users rather than dealers. It is way past time to legalize in New Jersey. And finally, in our final minute, Miley Cyrus was on the Jimmy Fallon show last night, revealed why she quit smoking marijuana. She says, quote, "It's like no one's ever died from weed, but no one's ever smoked as much as I did," end quote. Miley Cyrus, shut your mouth. No one's ever smoked as much as you did? Freaking Willie Nelson has more THC in his braids than you've ever smoked, okay? Come on, Snoop Dogg, ring a bell here, lady. No one smoked as much weed as I did. GTFO here, Miley Cyrus, come on. So she's got this new album out. She's promoting the new album, and she says that she wanted to be all sober now because she has such important things to say on this new album, and she wants to make sure that she's speaking clearly. Okay. Yeah, we want to make sure that we're taking Miley Cyrus seriously, that's for sure. She says, quote, "I've always been very stoned on your shows. I don't know if you know this, everybody. Remember the last time I was here, I was dressed as a bunny rabbit and then like a cat? There's a reason for that. I was high." Miley Cyrus. Okay, so what upsets me about this is, of course, my favorite chicken. I have four chickens, and my favorite chicken is named Miley Cyrus. We named her Miley Cyrus because we named all our chickens after pot-smoking women, but now Miley's not smoking no more. I might have to... Am I going to rename Miley Cyrus now? I don't know. Probably not. Anyway, that's all the time we got for today's show. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you check out MJAgenda.com. Become a patron. It's just $4.20 a month. Come on, $4.20 a month, that's less than a Starbucks. Urban here at Delta 9 House and Studios. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time,
follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
You take a seat, you manage, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you manage, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.